Du lyssnar på inspelningen från konferensen Nyanländas röster, en konferens som arrangerades som ett samarbete mellan Tankesmedjan Arena Idé och Invandrarindex den 26 januari. För att lyssna på övriga delar från konferensen så sök upp Arena Play antingen på SoundCloud, iTunes eller via valfri podcast-app.
Good morning, thank you very much and for having me here and sorry for not being able to speak in Swedish, but my integration efforts have not been so successful so far. I arrived last year and I promise I make an effort. I'm representing UNHCR, the UN Refugee Agency, and I think we are very pleased today to have a chance to address you, even if it's short, but to put a global perspective and a context to things which are happening here and also to the migration index. Before I go into this, I would just like to thank you also for those who are preparing this index, the organizers, and say that it's a very important initiative for UNHCR in general, and we believe it's worthwhile also to promote in other parts and countries. As you know, we are entrusted by the United Nations General Assembly with a mandate to protect refugee, to provide protection to refugee, and seek together with governments and partners for durable and solutions to their problems. And in this context, the integration element is a central element. And for most refugees coming to Europe, that is often also the important and most relevant solution. However, it's also for the communities receiving refugees a very challenging solution. From that perspective, the Nordic countries for us have been setting examples. I think there is a noticeable commitment, welcome commitment, to put in place policies and practices to work with refugees and migrants to help them to integrate in society, work with the communities. And I think the index, I think, can give probably very interesting information further on also for policymakers and practitioners how to further work with that. We encourage this work and hope it can be picked up in other countries. We also use our role as regional office to promote and share this with our other neighboring countries. We cover, for instance, the Baltic countries, where the situation with integration is a different one, started as a different point, and those examples are extremely welcome and looking forward to do more of this. In our own work, we have prioritized integration and support to refugee communities and their communities, I think, for many years. And one of the studies we did in 2013 has actually brought to light what you try to do and achieve today, and many others furthermore, is really to put at the center of policies, of decision-making, the consultation, the voices, the involvement of refugees in migration in order to have their views, their perspectives, reflected in those policies, something which we all as citizens of states feel is very, very normal, but which is important and not so much regular in other parts. In this context, many thanks to all of you, and many of you here are working on a day-to-day basis with refugees and have found various ways and avenues to facilitate that communication. And I think the Immigration Index here is one form which I think provides information on the situation and allows from there on also to adjust and further develop policies and ensure, and this is I think a key joint objective goal here, that when we speak about integration, that we find a kind of new contract social, a social contract between the communities and the arriving population, which is built on trust and respect. I leave it there. You will have more discussions on the further outcome of this year's Migration Index, and we'll take you and try to give you short overview on our view on global and European developments. I will start with the developments and with the aftermath actually of the events 2015-2016. Many call this a refugee crisis, a European refugee crisis. UNHCR does not. For us, this is indeed a management crisis. And looking at the numbers, 1.5, 1.2, whatever million people who have come to Europe in these years are indeed many people, too many people for one or for a few countries, but looking at Europe as a union of prosperous states with 500 million people, it cannot be too many in a way of managing and organizing this. And if we look at other parts of the world, this is what is happening, and I think in that sense there are many lessons from this situation to learn. We call it management crisis because what has missed was missing, and what I think also Sweden and other countries who have taken a leadership role here have felt, is the ability to show up a joint, consolidated European response to a situation of sudden arrival and to show solidarity and also the way of sharing responsibilities. For us, I think, and that's why we are also particularly grateful to Sweden and other countries who did take leaderships during these days and who are also leading processes forward. It's important to learn the lessons from these events. And I think when we look at the current situation, just by the numbers, the number went down by 70% in the European context, which, and you see this when we walk into the world situation, is not reflected in other parts of the world. Some of this has to do with responses to this crisis, with policies which have also made it more difficult to reach Europe. Other things we will see may have also some positive sides. Globally, current levels of displacement, of forced displacement, I have to say, in a way to set apart refugees and those who are fleeing violence and human rights violations from migrants who have also good reasons to move, but different reasons. And the legal framework in place is very different. So in that sense, I focus mainly on refugees and forced displacement. The levels remain at an unprecedented high level. You all know political solutions for situations which cause refugee problems have not been found, are not in sight yet. There's a historic or sad record, rather, to say that by the end of last year we exceeded the number of 66 million people forcefully displaced, and we will see the overall numbers, it's an initial number. And we are witnessing, of course, even more conflicts as we look into daily news and world developments. So in that sense, not too many positive signs. Still, Syria is, unfortunately, the largest humanitarian crisis our times, with more than 12 million people displaced, either inside Syria forcefully or outside. 55%, just bombard you with a few numbers, of all refugees globally come only from three countries, indicating the severity, of course, of those situations. Here, of course, Syria, Afghanistan and South Sudan are at the moment leading. 20 people on average per minute were forcefully displaced, for those who look into this in a more numerical way. In the year 2016, we will see what the number 17 will show, but probably very similar. Turkey is and remains the main refugee hosting country, with almost 3 million refugees, followed by Pakistan and Lebanon. And looking at the developments, we all focused on these central crises, but what many don't see as much and where the support is not so much forthcoming are the crises, for instance, in Yemen, which we as UN consider as one of the most tragic disasters humanitarian disasters in nowadays, with limited access to people who are suffering any imaginable, unimaginable drama. So I think there are crises in the world which are not at the forelines and the forefronts. And if I would list for you a group of nationalities, I think where more than 2 million of those nationalities are displaced, I think not many of us would be able to list them. I think among those groups are Congolese, are Colombians, Nigerians, and of course also Ukrainians, Sudanese. We have seen in the last year, I think, another very dramatic development in Myanmar, I think with more than 600,000 people who crossed from Myanmar to Bangladesh. Coming back to Europe, you see already the dimension of the challenges here, also for those other countries. And as I said, while the spotlight was on Europe in the last 2 years and our own ways of managing these challenges, we should not forget that 86% of those who are forcefully displaced are finding protection and support in countries who are not developed the way how our countries are developed. So in that sense, those countries are even more confronted with challenges and ways of handling those. Nevertheless, these countries have kept open their doors, I think have received refugees and persons seeking international protection, though they are suffering and of course also having limitations in ways of offering support and hospitality. And that makes seeking protection, seeking safety and support even more difficult nowadays. And what we also see is a type of a secondary movement, people who have found protection in some parts of the region's world, who are now forced to move further in order to find support in other places. This often is combined with or is abused by criminal gangs, smugglers who are organizing, facilitating these very dangerous journeys. And all, we are here in Europe especially very much familiar and focused, of course, on the situation in the Mediterranean from Central Africa at the moment, where again last year, another number which we have a tendency to get used to the every year since it happens, more than 5,000 lost their lives in the waters of the Mediterranean, not to mention the number of those who disappeared in the desert and are unaccounted for. Just as a background to our sort of overall assessment, and I promise there will be some positive elements also. UNHCR, with the support, of course, of the other UN agencies, civil society, but mainly also, of course, the states donating and supporting us, and here Sweden is leading, is continuing working to find ways and efforts on that. Most recently, as just one to mention, apart from all the work we do with all the partners, specifically on the Libya situation, we have put in place a mechanism to help people to be identified and leave the horrifying conditions in Libya to transit countries and then be able to transit either back home when there's no international protection need or to find support and access to European states also where there are family members or for protection reasons in the context of resettlement or family unification. This is a very small step looking at the dramatic situation with more than 18,000 people still kept in these horrifying centers and under these conditions, which I think violate and all known human rights. But it's a beginning, and I think the way forward indeed is here to continue working together with all partners here involved in making this change. On the positive side, I think there are some developments which not yet maybe show the same impact, but I think it's a positive signal at least. You will remember September 16, the New York Declaration, a pivotal moment for international refugee protection. The world, literally 193 states, have sort of committed to uphold the system, have committed to look for better ways to share solidarity, responsibility, contribute each other, and look at the refugee problem situation as a global situation which only can be solved in a global way, which we know nowadays is not anymore undisputed by all those who work in this field. But this New York Declaration has put in place a process which we call the Comprehensive Refugee Framework, a framework which has been tested currently in 13 countries. And it is describes a new way of working, which again is common sense actually, but I think it hasn't happened in the past so much, to bring in all elements of society, to bring in all partners, including the private sector, to work together rather than beside each other, trying to put this into a global perspective and see that things which can be done to support regions which host many refugees, that this not only money is coming for, but also development and further process, so that we are finding ways to end the need to move and helping each other by doing this in the one way financially, but of course also it includes also an element for the more developed world also to accept refugees on legal pathways in resettlement forms and other ways. The four objectives of this initiative, I think, describe it very well in which direction it goes. It is primarily to ease the pressure on the hosting communities, to allow those communities to maintain this hospitality and integration efforts and support efforts, to support refugees to become self-reliant so that they can contribute and can make their own efforts to work, build a new life. Then organizing access to third country solutions where there's resettlement and other ways needed, a sharing element, and of course also support to conditions in the countries of origin to help organizing return where it's possible to make a way forward that safety and dignity, the condition for safety and dignity are in place. This process is culminating this year in what we call the Global Refugee Compact. It will be presented as a, we call it zero draft, next week actually, and discussed formally with all governments. It has been consulted informally already on the main part, but we will basically see a comprehensive framework with an action plan which shows the way forward, how this work can hopefully be done further and more importantly, continue to guide our way. And the High Commissioner is planning to present this and has been tasked to present the Global Compact in September this year to the General Assembly as a work plan and as a plan to be adopted then. And in this regard, Sweden's, but also the support in all these countries here is extremely important, and I think we're very much grateful and encouraged to continue this. As regards Europe, I said already the numbers have gone down. I think we are, I guess, all familiar with the main reason. It has to do with the external border. In one way, positive, because indeed it's important that the external EU border needs to be protection sensitive, but one needs to also identify and register those who arrive. This has not been the case in the 15 years or before, which led to the loss of control and of course also to the feeling of an insecure, unstable situation. This has been done in the meantime in an orderly way, of course, combined with agreements with Turkey and other countries also to put in place elements which have contributed to the reduced number of arrivals, and also in the European Union, movements have become more difficult with the Schengen system also being more becoming a border system. We're looking, however, also in Europe and initiatives which are extremely helpful and in the global context important to support this global view and the global work and sharing of the initiatives. And this very much links to the European work with countries in Northern Africa and further on. The European Trust Fund, I think many of the funded initiatives by the European Union are helping concrete on the spot to help to make a difference and a change. It will take, of course, more time to see all these elements. Recently, I think European Union Commission called for 50,000 places for resettlement, which is for European Union on the historical scale a high number. However, compared, of course, to the global needs in resettlement with 1.2 million, it is a small step, but a right step and an important step on the way forward. And here, also to mention Sweden, I think with the resettlement program here, it's again a leading role, which I think is important to champion some of this, to encourage others to follow. UNHCR follows these developments very closely. We are important partners in consultation with all governments. And the hope we have is, despite all the difficulties, and those who have followed a bit the informal JHEA Justice and Home Affairs Council yesterday in Sofia, there is no agreement at the European level, and there's very little hope in one way, but there's still hope things could move and we could find ways forward. But importantly, it should be based on those lessons learned from the 15-16 situation, and it should look at the end result, what we want. And there UNHCR has put in place a plan or an idea or proposals, which I think has many elements which can be, also in practical terms, be implemented, and we're happy to share this further. We call it Better Protecting Refugees in Europe and Globally. And that basically entails a vision with some very concrete also plans to this. But it is the first vision to say we want and we would like to support a Europe that protects through a well-managed asylum system. That system should be accessible to refugees from around the world, of course, and it should also have a robust internal mechanism to share responsibility and solidarity. It should be a European Union which integrates and works for refugees and the communities which do that, and their integration, I think, being the important element to make the asylum system understood among the public at large, I think should have a priority, and many, many positive steps are already taken on that. The European Union should be a union which is prepared for arrivals of higher numbers of persons forcibly displaced. That lack of preparedness and that response in the national context has led actually to the situation we had been witnessing in 15-16. And it should be a European Union which is engaged beyond its own borders, works with countries of transit, countries of origin, to address the situation, which is a global one and requires global action and solidarity and partnership. All together, I think, and that's one of the key lessons learned. We are together in this, and it can only be done through joint action. No national independent action would help here. And it is important to do all these steps at the same time. So I think it doesn't make sense only to work with the country of origin and transit if you don't have your own system as an element also of solidarity and protection established in the Union. You need to put these three steps together and I think have progress on all areas. And that's why I think in closing, thinking that Sweden and also society here is on a good way, has seen that and is practicing that. Let me thank you for all this work, and especially the organization working directly with refugees, the institutions. We as UNHCR stand ready to continue our support, also to work with you on those other challenges. We acknowledge these challenges, but I think jointly, I think we can find a way forward and hopefully in the interest of those who we call refugees, the persons who need international protection. Tack så mycket. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I'd like to remind you all that the UNHCR has an excellent site as well. They are very good in providing data and charts and maps. Please go to the site and have a look at it because it's very useful when you want to learn more about the refugee situation. Thank you so much for taking your time to come. Cecilia Tuvesson från Migrationsverket. Vi går vidare till den svenska situationen från Migrationsverkets omvärldsenhet. Du är analytiker där och har med dig till och med lite bilder för oss här. Lägger vi upp. Varsågod.
Tack så mycket. Cecilia Tuvesson heter jag och jag arbetar på omvärldsenheten på Migrationsverket. Min enhet bildades 2013 av dåvarande generaldirektör på Migrationsverket. Man vill inte bli överraskad, man vill ha en god beredskap. Och det vi gör är att vi tittar på vilka det är som tar sig till Sverige, varför de väljer just Sverige och hur man tar sig till Sverige. Vi tittar alltså på migrationspolitiken, hur den påverkar migranter. Vi tittar på push- och pull-faktorer, alltså push-faktorer. Varför man väljer att lämna sitt land och migrera. Och pull-faktorer, varför man väljer just Sverige. Och det kan ha att göra med att man har en diaspora i Sverige. Man har släkt eller nätverk i Sverige. Som nämndes i föregående presentation så finns det väldigt många människor som befinner sig på flykt i världen. Jag tror att UNHCR kom ut för 1,5 år sedan med en rapport att 65,3 miljoner människor tvingas lämna sina hem och befinner sig på flykt i världen. De allra flesta stannar ju som internflyktingar, men kommer inte ens utanför sitt eget lands gränser. Och det blir också ganska tydligt när vi tittar på migranterna som tar sig till Sverige idag. Det är inte så många som kommer från Jemen till exempel. Utan de flesta människor på flykt kommer kanske migrerar inom sitt eget land. Och befinner sig i en fruktansvärd situation såklart. När vi tittar på migrationsrutterna till Europa så är det ju så att vi har tre stora rutter. Den östra medelhavsrutten från Turkiet till Grekland, som var den absolut största rutten under 2015. Och där de flesta av de största nationaliteterna som vi har i Sverige idag, som söker asyl i Sverige, de tar sig genom denna rutten till Sverige. Så den här rutten bevakar vi väldigt noggrant, därför att den är stor för Sveriges del. Sen har vi den centrala medelhavsrutten, alltså framförallt från Libyen och upp till Italien, som är som man kan säga tog vid när den östra medelhavsrutten minskade, så ökade den markant och nådde sin kulmen någon gång under första halvåret 2017. Sen har den kraftigt minskat. Sen har vi den västra medelhavsrutten, alltså från Marocko och upp till Spanien, som har ökat sedan egentligen december 2016. Den ökade under hela förra året. Och det man kan se nu är att rutterna, den västra rutten, den östra medelhavsrutten och den centrala medelhavsrutten, är mer eller mindre lika stora. När det gäller den västra rutten så är den ganska Den är intressant för oss därför att många av de ensamkommande barnen från Marocko som kommer till Sverige idag förmodligen använder sig av denna rutten för att ta sig uppåt längs med Sverige, till Sverige. Jag tog med en bild som jag tycker visar ganska väl hur migrationssituationen ser ut. Om vi tittar på den vänstra bilden så är det alltså de största nationaliteterna för asylsökande mellan januari till november för 2017 och 2016. Och det vi kan se är att de största grupperna, Syrien, Irak, Afghanistan, faktiskt minskar. Det finns andra grupper som har ökat och ett tydligt exempel är Georgien. Som kanske inte är det, den nationaliteten som vi tänker som framförallt asylsökande. Den här gruppen har ökat i slutet av 2017, tror det var oktober och framåt. Och det sätter vi i ett samband med viseringsfriheten som Georgien fick till EU under i mars 2017. Så det är alltså en av de största grupperna som vi har nu. Vi tittar på dem och vi följer utvecklingen där. När det gäller ensamkommande barn som vi ser på den högra sidan så talar den bilden sitt tydliga språk. De allra flesta grupperna har minskat när det gäller ensamkommande barn till Sverige. Den enda gruppen som har ökat och ökar kraftfullt det är marockanska ensamkommande barn. Det är också yngre barn som kommer från Marocko och det är en väldigt utsatt grupp som riskerar såklart att hamna i kriminalitet och så vidare. Men de andra grupperna har alltså så minskat. Man kan säga att vi har haft en ganska stabil utveckling av antalet asylsökande som tar sig till Sverige sedan någon gång i mars 2016. Och det finns ju flera orsaker till detta. Framförallt EUs och Turkiets migrationsöverenskommelse hade en tydlig påverkan och begränsade migrationen. Har gjort det avsevärt mellan Turkiet och Grekland. Vi har också olika former av gränshinder i Europa och gränskontroller, inte minst i Sverige, som har gjort att det har blivit mycket svårare att ta sig igenom Europa och till Sverige. Och sen har vi också fått en tillfällig lagstiftning som begränsar migrationen och inte minst anhöriginvandringen. Det har blivit mycket svårare, mycket tuffare. Och den gäller ju fram till 2019. Så att det är väl egentligen de tre större faktorerna som gör att det har blivit svårare att ta sig igenom Europa och till Sverige. Och det syns ju tydligt på, om man tittar på till exempel statistiken från föregående bild. Vi tittar också på alltså, migrantprofiler. Vilka nationaliteter är det som tar sig till Sverige? Ja, att en senegales till exempel inte väljer kanske Sverige som förstahandsalternativ är ju inte så konstigt. Talar man franska så kanske man snarare söker sig till Frankrike. Men vi tror också att vissa grupper har en större diaspora, mer nätverk och det blir då mer fördelaktigt att försöka ta sig till Sverige. Vi på omvärldsenheten tittar också på bifallsfrekvens. Finns det någon nationalitet som har en hög bifallsfrekvens i Sverige så är det också kanske inte så konstigt att man försöker ta sig till Sverige och söka asyl. Antalet migranter som söker sig till Europa och till Sverige är ju ganska litet ändå. Alltså det är inte så många. Vi har ju haft en väldigt speciell, kan man säga, utveckling i Sverige. Jag tror det var drygt 80 000 som kom hit 2014. 163 000 2015. Och sen är vi nere på betydligt, betydligt lägre nivåer nu. Och vi tror att bilden av Sverige kan ha påverkats. Vi har ett tuffare asylsystem idag. Men vi är ju inte ensamma om det. Det har ju de flesta andra länder också. Så Sverige är nog ändå relativt attraktivt för de flesta grupperna. Tittar vi på prognosen framåt så kan man säga så att ja, för 2018 så tänker vi oss i vår prognos som vi släppte i oktober, vilket är vår senaste prognos, så sa vi att omkring 24 000 asylsökande kommer att försöka ta sig till Sverige och söka asyl 2018. Och ensamkommande barn räknar vi med omkring 1 500. Det planerar vi för. Vi tror alltså fortfarande att det kommer vara relativt stabilt. Vi vet att vi har gränskontroller fram till maj och att gränskontrollerna, att kommissionen har öppnat upp för att de kan förlängas. Vi från Sveriges sida har ju varit väldigt förespråkare för en reviderad Dublinförordning med ett mer solidariskt ansvarstagande för asylsökande i Europa. Jag läste i DN igår att nu det är många länder som vi ju vet, exempelvis Polen, Ungern och Tjeckien, som absolut inte vill detta. Men vi, från Sveriges sida driver vi ju ändå det, att det ska vara ett mer solidariskt asylsystem. Och det är en intressant fråga för oss på omvärldsenheten att följa. Vi tittar ju också på mottagningskapaciteten. En del länder är, om man får säga ordet, belastade. Så är det ju. Vissa länder tar inga asylsökande i princip idag, medan andra har väldigt många. Det är också många migranter som har blivit strandade på vägen, som inte tar sig igenom Europa för att till exempel ta sig till Sverige för att kunna söka asyl här. Vi har ett valår i Sverige i år, och det blir också väldigt intressant att se vad som händer där inom migrationspolitiken, som ju självklart kommer att påverka vår prognos för 2019 och framåt. Och sen har vi en överenskommelse, en migrationsöverenskommelse mellan EU och Turkiet som är ganska skör och som, om den skulle fallera, skulle få enorma konsekvenser för migrationen förmodligen. Jag stannar där. Ni får gärna komma och prata med mig på pausen, rasten.
Tack så hemskt mycket, Cecilia. En varm applåd.